What are you going to play, Sam?
We're going to play Take Me Out to the Ball Game. We're all going to sing it, too.
Another edition of Meet Me at Mutual, episode 25, I believe, as we're piling up the numbers here. And speaking of piling up the numbers, and well, by the way, I shouldn't transition before we introduce ourselves. So I'm Daniel Shoptaw from C70 at the Bat. You can find me on Twitter at C70. With me, Alan Medlock from the Red Bird Daily. You can find him at amedlock1. And speaking of piling up numbers, the Cardinals actually piled up some wins this week, Alan. We've got a few things to talk about. Good, a lot more good than bad this week, or at least a lot more good than there was last week.
Oh yeah, it's after Sunday. I was so frustrated that it was probably the worst performance I remember as a Cardinals fan. You know, some of the guys on the site were asking me that. You know, being the elder statesman, they were asking me, "What's the worst Cardinals team you remember?" And the Joe Torre years were lean, but some of those rosters were not good. This is a good roster, and they just weren't playing hard. And the best news that I think the Cardinals got all week, and I think we were just looking for anything, was that Mozeliak intervened, because that means that we weren't the only ones witnessing that. And, you know, the way that I look at it, the season started Monday. They won 4 out of 5. They looked really good tonight. And, you know, I'm in a much better mood this Friday than last Friday. So, you know. Getting some wins, and Wainwright looked pretty good tonight. So that's all you can ask for.
All right, well, let's take a little bit deeper look at the past week then in our Redbird Rewind.
He got him! Struck him out! Look at the scene on the field. McCarver, the first one. Now his infielders all over him. A new world's record of 17 strikeouts in one game.
All right, the Cardinals started out, and like I said, since our last time to get together, like you said, the Cardinals lost two more games in New York, got swept by the Yankees, and that Sunday night game, especially, well, let's go back to the Saturday game, because I didn't get to watch this game, but it was a very unique game in the fact that Carlos Martinez, you know, struck out 8 and walked 11 in 5 innings. Didn't give up a whole lot of hits because, you know, nobody could seem to hit the ball one way or another. When you pair that with the game last night where Carlos came out at least with a rough first inning, although kind of settled down, are there concerns about Carlos Martinez, or is this one of those it's early, he'll settle in type of things?
You know what? I think that's the case. I think he's going to settle in. I thought that his movement, and I had, you know, I kind of, Cup of Joe and everybody, I was asking them tonight, I said, did you get a chance to go over the game pretty thoroughly? And he goes, I did. And I said, to me, it looked like he had a lot of movement. And I thought the same thing about Saturday night, that he was actually, when he settled down, he was filthy. I think he's just having some first inning issues. Not really sure, I mean, how to curb that, but... But I think that it's one of those. I think it's just a strike zone frustration at this point. His body language kind of says strike zone frustration. I don't think it's the lack of interest that was said, which I think was blown out of proportion, by the way. But it was said on the broadcast last night. I think that's what it is. I just think he's struggling to find the strike zone. I think his movement is that it moves off the table that much that he's really struggling with it. For now, so they just got to rein that back in. But even whenever he locked in after the first inning in both games, he was really filthy, and they were having trouble making contact. Last night, for about 2.5 innings, he was almost untouchable.
Yeah, I mean, it really did look like there was a huge difference between the first and then the rest of the inning. And even late, you know, he gave up a base hit, and then he got beat by Eric Thames, who is beating everybody right now.
Sure, so that's not, yeah.
A huge thing, not a huge surprise. But yeah, in the middle of there, he looked much more like the Carlos Martinez that we're used to. You know, I will say, I had heard some people say it. Again, I didn't see the game against the Yankees. I did hear some people say, and not just on the broadcast, I heard some other people say that he looked a little disinterested in that game. And I can't attest to that. I didn't watch any of it. But, you know, last night, you know, there was a lot of the same stuff going around, not only between that, but his hair issues as well in the first inning. And, you know, it's not like he changed his, you know, didn't get a haircut and he didn't change his approach from that. And he was very dominant, like, say, for the second, third, fourth innings. So hopefully that's the case. Hopefully we're looking at just somebody getting a little bit of a slow start. Maybe, I know he pitched well in the WBC, but maybe that's, you know, there's a little bit of a lag there. I mean, there's always going to be that issue. As I think he, you know, Mike Matheny pointed out, ever since Mitchell Boggs went to the WBC and never came back, basically, at least not in the Mitchell Boggs that we knew. I think there's always going to be concern about pitchers going there, and especially if they struggle on their way back. You know, that being said, it's a totally different situation. Carlos pitched about like he normally would have pitched as being a starter versus, you know, Boggs, who just did not get into games as a reliever and then was, you know, completely off his rhythm. So I don't think you can really blame the WBC. I don't want to say that. But it's possible that it has thrown him off a little bit, because we've only seen the one real good game out of him, which was opening night.
Sure, and he's so eccentric that he was told his first 2 years of his time in the big leagues was, hey, you cannot go that many miles an hour as a starter. You're just not going to be able to do it. You're going to have to start reining that in. And that may be an issue. That may be part of the body language of he's got to fight to not be that player, you know, of being just out and about. And he's still young. I mean, I understand he signed a big contract and everything, but he's the ace. He's their best pitcher, and you know, he's still learning the ropes and learning himself in a big league manner.
Well, and you do wonder. I mean, somebody pointed out, and I don't know because I haven't noticed it either, but we haven't had a lot of opportunities to notice it. But it doesn't seem like I don't know that he's doing the water splashes this year.
I wondered about that, and it was, you know, I can't remember if it was Cassie that but I had thought about that. I was going, I don't know if I've seen one this year, and I thought about that a couple nights ago when she asked the question. I go, that must be the case. I just naturally thought I missed it, but you know, I haven't seen one. When those little things change, I don't know if it's just a hey, let's try something new, or if it's stiff again. That's what always worries me.
Yeah. Well, and you know, it could be that Carlos thought, hey, I've signed this big contract. I've got to, you know, grow up, if you will. But,
sure,
you know, there is something to be said for, you know, that making – that's part of what you have. And, again, I think we get into that whole argument of whether baseball should be, you know, fun, all that kind of thing, you know, whether people should be showing all the emotion or, you know, goofing off or whatever, or if it should be a serious business. You know, Mike Matheny has come out and said he can't have fun and compete. He said that at the beginning of this, in the spring. He said he wishes he could, but he's a guy that has to compete, and he can't, you know, it's got to be really focused, really serious, and that sometimes spills over maybe into the clubhouse. But, you know, I've never had, obviously the Cardinals never had a huge issue with it. They're making a bobblehead for next week. That's Carlos splashing yeah, Carpenter. So, if nothing else, marketing purposes, keep it up. I don't know. Maybe there is some changes. Maybe there's some growing spurts, growing pains, if you will, working toward a maturity level. And I don't want to say that Carlos was immature, because he was. I don't, you know, not any more than a person his age normally is. I think that he was fine, but maybe he feels like there needs to be a change. I don't know. Again, we're looking at three starts, four maybe now. There's still a lot. I mean, it could be just a bad month. And again, he's showing flashes, like you said. It's not something you want to really worry about, but it is kind of strange. And we'll transition maybe a little bit talking about the rest of that. Right now, I think most Cardinal fans would much rather see the 3, 4, 5 starters out there than the first two.
Yeah, it's very true. I think that's Wainwright, maybe won some of people over tonight. When you knock in four runs, that's always a big help as well. But he looked good. He struck out nine. And now, one thing, I don't want to completely downplay this on a start, because nine strikeouts is nine strikeouts. Mm-hmm. I have a feeling that Brewers team may strike out a lot this year. I mean, I think they're all or nothing. So, yeah, I mean, I think they struck out. I think it was either 14 or 15 times total tonight. So, not like I said, not to deadpan it. So, I thought Waino looked good. But, yeah, that's at this point, those three, Walker's look great. Lynn's looked really competitive, and Leek's looked outstanding. So if that's the case, I have full faith in Martinez coming back around, which could make for a really good rotation.
Brewer struck out 17 times tonight.
Is that what it was? Yeah, okay, it was. I lost count at 14.
Yeah, so. Maybe. The issue with Wainwright, again, you're not going to know what you're going to get out of Wainwright for a while, I don't think. There's going to be a lot of possibilities there between, you know, a good outing or a mediocre outing or a really bad outing. But the sad thing is, again, you know, he did put up the nine strikeouts, and so at least there's some reason there. But he threw 100 pitches in five innings. He has yet to go past mm-hmm. the fifth in any of his starts. And while that's fine if the bullpen is strong, which it was tonight, that's not what we expect out of Adam Wainwright. You want to see him getting into the seventh, you know, at least getting through the sixth. It seems like he's going to have to really battle, to have success. Now, you know, tonight he drove in more runs than he gave up, and that's a great thing. I love seeing Adam, you know, swing the bat like that. But it's still, I think it's still a little scary. I don't know that we're really confident just yet into what we're going to see out of Wainwright every time out.
Oh, and I'm guilty of that. After last night's the one that I really wanted, because the way that I looked at it, after the sweep at Pittsburgh, if you could go in and split this series, that's a 5-2 week. It's a fantastic week coming back home. And I thought that would have been great. And I kind of thought, I was like, well, I expect to see a better start out of Martinez last night. And selfishly, I said, I could see Wainwright having a lot of problems here tonight. And I kind of thought that you may win. If you can steal one game, you're probably going to lose the second game, and then it's a crapshoot the rest of the time. But that shows how much confidence I had in the start. I thought it could be really bad. But, you know, you still won. He pitched well, And you're right, the high pitch count in five innings is worrisome, but like you and I said, he's going to battle at every start now. If he can get that to where he's going six and turning the ball over, or going five and that being Lyon's role to follow him, then, you know, that could be big. And you know, I think there's an uptick in the rotation, even as decent as it's been so far.
Yeah, you know, you're right. We kind of thought that, you know, with his fly ball tendencies and the way the Brewers are hitting and the way the ballpark is playing, that was going to be an ugly matchup for him. I'm pulling his game log up here for a minute because it's a little interesting, and I want to see what I'm thinking here. It's not quite as pronounced as I thought, but, you know, his first time out, he struck out six batters, and then he struck out nine tonight. Even though he's not going deep into games, it feels like it's almost like it's a strikeout or nothing. I mean, it wasn't quite as pronounced as I thought. He only struck out three in his second start and four in his third. But, you know, even so, you're looking at, you know, four strikeouts and 4.2 innings, or three strikeouts and four innings. I mean, he's averaging probably about a strikeout an inning, which is a little bit surprising out of him out of Wainwright. But it just feels like it's almost where if he doesn't strike them out, they're going to hit that ball hard. He's given up a lot of hard balls hit so far this year.
Yeah, that has been the most worrisome part. And I almost felt like you could feel that coming at the, you know, last year. A lot of hard contact. And I'd always said this to, you know, when my friends were talking about, even when he was a bona fide ace, I really thought that every fifth or sixth start, you could count on a clunker. Mm-hmm. And what would happen is he would give up a lot of hard contact. And I don't know if that's what's happening now. You know, I don't know if that's Wainwright, that's what we're going to get. Or if, you know, he's trying to figure something else out. You know, I don't know, but that is the most worrisome part.
Yeah, it was One time I did, I looked at, well, it's back in about, 2015 or so, when I did a look at Lance Lynn's big innings, when we used to call them the Linnings, where he would give them up. And when I just did some general things of whether it worked or not, I did see that about Adam Wainwright. It felt like there were times where he gave up, just huge, bad outings. And they were just kind of strange, just drop in there where, you're going along and all of a sudden he gives up, has eight runs and such like that. So, it very well may be the same kind of thing. Just a little bit more pronounced now that he's getting a little bit older, but, it's kind of scary, but we'll see. I mean, and again, if Lynn and Walker and Lee can pitch like they've been pitching, and I don't know how long they keep it up, but if assuming they could keep it up for the rest of the year, even if Wainwright pitches like a number five in your two spot, your other guys are pitching much better than their spot. So it all kind of works out, even though it's not the order that maybe you would think it would be.
No, and that's, and I think that's contagious. I think if they all stay the course and pitch close to what they've been pitching now, I mean, I think you're going to get these starts out of Wainwright, and we're going to be glad that we get these starts. I think that it may be a struggle for him. He's not what we're used to, but I think he's going to reinvent himself and be serviceable.
So the Cardinals, they lose the two games to the Yankees, and as much as we don't really want to say it after 2 weeks, it really did feel like the sky was, if it wasn't falling, it was getting a few cracks at it, and maybe getting a little shaky. Cardinals come home, and as you said, it was fairly obvious that John Mozeliak and Mike Matheny had a sit-down conversation Monday morning, because then Mo comes out to the press that afternoon and says a few things that were kind of like, this is the way it's going to be now. One of which was Johnny Peralta isn't doing anything. It's hard to imagine him over there. The Matt Adams experiment, it's over. And Mo didn't say these things, quite as directly as that, but he didn't leave a whole lot of wiggle room in there. And ever since then, the team has looked, the decisions have made a lot more sense, I guess, let's put it that way. Johnny Peralta did not play for a couple of days and then went on the disabled list with an upper respiratory infection that you may or may not believe, depending on who you are.
You know my theory on that. Yeah. Go ahead, man.
Matt Adams has only pinch hit one game, I think, maybe twice. I guess they pinch hit again tonight, I think. Greg Garcia, Jose Martinez, they're finding Jed Jerko's even getting out there, but those guys are finding a lot more playing time. It just feels like you said, Mo said, we're going to reset this. And so far, it seems like it's working.
Yeah, I was pleased to hear that he intervened, because I was really down Sunday. I was like, this is awful. It was embarrassing. Didn't look like they had any life at all. It was bad. I felt like it's easy to say now. I thought that first road trip was going to be tough regardless. I think Washington's really good, and I think New York's ultimately going to be pretty good just because of all the power that they have. And I thought it was going to be a tough road trip. And the majority of those games being night games, I can't stand the Sunday night games, and I always think you're at a disadvantage in those. and I thought that would be a tough test for him. I think coming back to Bush reset it, but I'm so glad that he got involved. And I think there were some serious closed-door meetings. And a lot of people want to hear this. I don't think that anything is ever going to happen. But I think this was the first chance that we get to see Mozeliak say or admit that there was a problem in that dugout. And I think it was pointed directly at Matheny. He's never going to do that in public. But I think that that's what the meeting was about, of, hey, we're going to tighten the reins on this a little bit. And this is the direction we're going to go. We're embarrassing ourselves. And we're going to, step by step, we're going to improve. And I think you've seen a different team starting Monday.
It feels like it. It does help that the Cardinals have won 4 of 5. After watching last night, you could have been forgiven if you weren't sure how long this was going to hold, but bouncing back tonight helped. You look at that Pittsburgh series, though, three straight games. They won all three, but they only won them two to one each time, which kind of indicated that the offense wasn't clicking just yet at all. Good starting pitching, just enough offense. Saw a home run out of Colton Wong, two home runs out of Dexter Fowler, a couple of guys that really needed to get going. And then the bullpen, for the most part, held. But, boy, I don't know. There's still a lot of concern about Sung Wong Oh, I think. You know, he got two saves in that series, but he didn't make it easy either time.
No, and I don't know. This is going to sound crazy because we don't really know what Rosenthal's role is going to be in that bullpen. But it seems like there's been a lot of stability since he's been back. I don't know if it's the safety blanket with him involved, but it just seems like everybody's kind of starting to find their spot and pitch a little bit better. That being said, I've thought this from day one, that Rosenthal was going to be the closer before it was all said and done. And I think O's pitching, making that happen, which sometimes that wouldn't be bad. I mean, if you can have two closers in that eighth and ninth role, however both of them do it, it could be great. But, yeah, there is it's funny because he was just lights out in the WBC, and there may be a little bit of hangover from that. But either that or he could be fitting into that role of Cardinals closers from the past of, you know, your Franklins, your Dave Veers. You know, you can go down the line of they were more productive when they had allowed, you know, two or three base runners.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, always seems to be the case, unfortunately, that no matter how good the closer is, the next year it's kind of shaky.
Oh, yeah, that's – like I've always said, that is not – performance is hard because it's such a fragile position. You know, it seems like there's always a regression out of that spot, no matter who it is, if you're not named Rivera.
Yeah.
You know, so that's about it.
Well, I mean, really, we're just such small sample sizes that, you know, it's very difficult. Like, you know, have a good 30 innings. That's, you know, like, what, four or five starts for a starting pitcher. Mm-hmm. That could be a whole season for a closer. So, yeah, I think that there is some of that idea of maybe the league's catching up to him. You know, maybe he's just not quite where he needs to be, and he will, hopefully so. But it is good. Like you said, it is good to see Trevor Rosenthal. I mean, he gave up the home run to Braun tonight, but for the most part has looked very, very sharp, to the point that, knock on wood, if he needed to go in and take over the ninth and move Sung Wan Oh to the eighth, that he could do that, or have some sort of timeshare arrangement where they both kind of, you know, alternate, like we saw this week where the, you know, Oh took the first two saves and then instead of throwing him for another night like Matheny normally would have done, probably.
Mm-hmm.
And, Rosenthal came out and got the save on Wednesday afternoon. Yeah, I think the bullpen in general has been a significantly better this week. And maybe, like you said, maybe it is just the addition of Rosenthal out there that has kind of helped stabilize some roles and things of that nature. But, you know, lots of guys, you know, Brett Cecil has looked more like the guy that they gave money to. You know, Jonathan Broxton even is pitching a little bit. He pitched, you know, he's still putting some runners on, and you still don't want him in a high leverage situation, but he's not an automatic meltdown like it felt like at some points in time. You know, there's a lot of things going right for this team. And hopefully that hole they dug themselves in at the beginning of the first 2 weeks is not going to come back and haunt them.
Yeah, that's, I hope that's not the case. And all along, I've just wanted to be in contention around the deadline because I think that they can make moves to improve and be right there in a wild card spot. But I'm so glad the bullpen's improving because that was what I personally thought was going to be the strength of the team. I thought they were going to be, if they had a lead, they were going to be hard to score on late. And man, it was just it was crazy the first 2 weeks. There was no confidence in anybody other than Bowman and Sokolovich, of course, but he just didn't get the appearances that everybody else does. Now I think that it's kind of coming back. They're coming back down to earth. I think that it's improving. I think that Segrist is a big question mark at this point. I still think that's going to be a DL stint at some time. I don't know if you got a chance to see this today, but Mozeliak was interviewed by Jim Hayes before the before the game, and he had some comments that were really kind of raised your eyebrows about, because it was like, hey, we see that the velocity is down. If it doesn't come back, we're going to have definite issues, and it may be an injury issues that we just haven't pinpointed yet. So I just think it's short term, to where I think that Seagrass would probably, they're going to have to figure something out with that, especially with Lyons back and with some of the minor league arms performing.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. Should have transitioned that. That was the one arm that's really not doing anything. And Seagrass, even though Wednesday did all right, the defense kind of fell apart behind him. He still worked his way out of it. He's walked, I don't remember, it was basically, it's one walk for every two outs, and that's dangerously bad for a reliever when you mix in a few hits as well. And then we saw, last night where he gave up two-run home. I think he walked a guy and then gave up a home run. I think that's right. I may be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think there is some very significant concern there. And when you look at the fact that, just a couple of years ago, he led the major leagues with 81 appearances. Last year, he had 67 appearances. It's it would not be surprising if his arm isn't able to handle all that, that there is some sort of physical issue there.
Yeah, well, and that's, a lot of people point to that with Rosenthal last year, because Matheny went to the well a ton with Seagrass and Rosenthal, 15. That's about the only two guys that he relied on that year. And there's a definite hangover, and you've seen it with both of those guys. And he may have just thrown his arm off at this point. I don't know.
And that then leads you to ask about Matt Bowman, because Matt Bowman has pitched in, I think, nine games already this year. And granted, for a while there, he's the only guy you could trust. And again,
selfishly, I'm glad to see it, but I know what you mean.
Yeah, and it was, it's kind of one of those things that the offense would score three or four runs and give you a two or three run lead, then you could bring in somebody like Broxton or Sokolovich or something like that with a little bit more interest. But the offense kept giving him one run games, and so he kept bringing in Matt Bowman because that was about the only guy he could trust it for a while there. I'm amazed at what Bowman has been able to do, but it feels like you don't want to rear him out, because that could really happen here pretty soon.
Yeah, that's a definite concern, and like I said, I love to see him getting loose, because I figure that he was the best that you had for a while. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping that kind of, with Lyons back, I'm a big Lyons guy. And I'm hoping that he kind of adds to that stability a little bit, and I hope that Matheny can build confidence in some of these guys, because I really do think this could be a good bullpen.
I think so. I mean, it should be. It should be a bullpen that's able to lock down leads, and that the starting pitching is going the way it is, you won't need a whole lot of offense, which is probably a good thing, because I don't know that we're going to get it. But it's still kind of waiting in progress. Again, good night at a Wainwright tonight. We get into you split the first two with Milwaukee, with a chance with Lynn and Leak going the next couple nights, chance to still win that series. Cardinals are hanging around in this race. Let me pull up the most current standings, because I know the Cubs apparently keep coming back on these late games and winning. Which
is
very, very irritating.
Yeah.
Feel like there's some times where they could be buried in there, coming back and beating up on bullpens, and not what you want to see. They did it tonight. They've moved into first place with a 9-7 record, but the Cardinals 7-10, so they're 2.5 games out of first place right now. They're sitting in last place still, don't get me wrong, but for the fact that this season has been so yucky so far, at least, even though this week has been good, to be within 2.5 games of first right now, that doesn't feel that bad.
No, not at all, and it's promising. If you can win the series, head back to St. Louis, where you have Toronto coming in, and Toronto has looked pretty bad, and they're also going to be one of those situations where they're built on offense. Their offense is not very good right now, and they're going to lose one of those bats, without having the DH in St. Louis. So you definitely have to think they have the advantage in that series, and you can start building a little bit of momentum. It's just, I'm kind of trying to not look too far ahead at this point, just because every time I think we've built some momentum, it is it completely gets shot down. You know, I thought that you could go in and compete in the New York City a little bit harder than you did after beating Scherzer, and, you know, that wasn't the case at all. They didn't have any fight in them. So, like I said, try not to look too far ahead, but you have a chance here to make up some serious ground. Three games is a good week. You know, three games in the standings is a good week, and you never know. I'm bullish. I still think the offense is going to come around. I think that we're going to start seeing – I think you're going to start seeing some more walks out of Fowler by the fact that he's swinging the bat so much better. I think he's trying to force the issue. I think Diaz was doing the same. I think that Diaz really felt like he had to carry the offense there for a little while and really got out of rhythm. I mean, he's not walking at all, but he's still getting hits. Mm-hmm. And doesn't strike out much, doesn't walk much, but we'll put the bat on the ball. So I think that's going to come around. And then you look that you're hoping that that Carpenter and Piscotty and those guys kind of come back to their normal ground, and you're going to be pretty good. I kind of like the lineup today. I never really considered Jerko in the cleanup spot, but mainly because, you know, he came up as a second baseman, and I'm still one of those guys that hate to see one of your middle infielders hitting cleanup. That's always driven me nuts. Like, I hated the first baseman leading off last year. I don't know. I know numbers say otherwise, but it's still just frustrating. But if he's going to play third every day, and we show that he's hitting very well. He's on fire right now. So I like him being in the middle of the lineup. Like, you got to think they're going to score some more runs.
You would think so. Everything coming together. We saw that the two home runs out of Dexter Fowler, and we saw the night before him walking and, you know, getting some hits. Like you've said, they feel like they're close, and Dexter feels like he's close. But, you know, last night was a tough step back. Are we ever going to see – and then he leaves tonight with a heel injury – mm-hmm. How serious is this going to be? I mean, one, I know he's been struggling, but you still want him in the lineup.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, on both sides. I mean, that's, you know, the advanced numbers that guys are going to throw up about how he is just not a great center fielder. To me, he glides to the ball and he gets mm-hmm. to everything. And that's what I think you need in a center fielder. He makes it look easy and goes a long way to get some stuff. You know, bursitis of the heel. That's, you're basically looking at a blister inside your heel, you know, the bursal sac that's swollen. I'm assuming he'll probably get tomorrow off as well, just to heal it up. That's an ibuprofen, or it could be a, you know, steroid injection, you know, waiting to happen down the line, which isn't bad. But yeah, you got to get him in the lineup. My biggest fear about that situation is that Matheny's going to move Carpenter right back to the leadoff spot if he's out, and I think that would be more harm than good. I think that hurts the balance and things. And I just hope that's not the situation. So I hope he's not out any extended period of time. It wouldn't surprise me if we don't see him till Sunday, though.
Well, I mean, if he doesn't move, I mean, who's going to hit leadoff? I mean, that's the first time Fowler's played every game so far as I know, that I can think of. Who's going to hit leadoff, do you think, if Carpenter doesn't?
Yeah, I was thinking about that. It may be by default, unless they, you know, I don't. Wong's playing well enough to where he doesn't need to come out of the lineup. I think you have to have Jerko in the lineup, because that eliminates maybe Garcia coming in leading off. So it's a good question. You may not have any other option, but you know, I just hope it doesn't. I hope there's no long term repercussions on the situation if that happens.
Yeah, I mean, and yeah, we want him to be back healthy as soon as possible. So, it feels like that's the biggest part of this week. I guess maybe we should, before we leave it though, maybe we should talk a little bit more about this Mosaloc thing. Because like you said, it's very nice that John Mosaloc got involved, but I guess then that begs the question, should Mosaloc have to get involved? Is this a situation again? It feels like so often that Mo is navigating around his manager. Not that Mike Matheny's in any danger of going anywhere, but it still just feels like every once in a while these two just aren't on the same page. And when that happens, obviously Mo gets his way.
Yeah, that's you always want to see it be cohesive. But I thought it was so bad over the weekend that I was just glad that something was done, because I was afraid that there was just going to be some complacency. Let's wait this out. Let's see if things turned around. And he wasn't having it. And to come in and say, you know, this is how we're going to do this, and we're going to cut out some of the nonsense, and these are the pieces that you're going to be handed. I like that. I mean, that's you know, a lot of organizations, you know, front office run the team. I think that Matheny, I don't want to say, what I want to say is going to probably make us lose listeners, but, you know, I understand what Matheny's role is. You know, he's going to make the lineups. He's going to do the field ops. I think there's a lot of people that don't have a lot of faith in his ability to do that. I don't think we've gotten to that. You know, like I said, he's been in the playoffs for the first 5 years of his career. But I don't have any issues with him, say, like, doing it in the manner that he did, because I think something needed to be done, and it was basically an embarrassment to the organization.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, you had to catch it beforehand. I mean, we talked so much over this winter and going into this year about how every game counts, and you can't afford to get any farther back. I mean, like I said, they've just been lucky that the Cubs, especially the Cubs, I think even if anybody else in the division had gotten off to a, you know, 11-2 start or something like that, then you could worry about them. Maybe you think maybe they're going to come back to it. But if the Cubs had gotten off to such a rip-roaring start, then it was, you know, call it quits and start looking at the wild card. I guess one of the benefits of the wild card, I know at one time the idea was the Giants and the Mets were going to be the people involved in that wild card race. Well, the Giants are struggling, and they're out. Madison Bumgarner's out for maybe 2 months, and the Mets are doing the same. Although they're, you know, a little bit under 500, and they got like half their team hurt. So, if that's the case, now you know there's obviously some teams that are playing better than expected, like Arizona, but in Colorado. So, you know, you never know. But if it was going to shake out that way, the Cardinals would have that a little bit of an advantage there. But like I say, long way to go, but it's just very good that we're not completely buried so far.
Yeah, showing some signs of life, definitely.
Very good. All right, well, I think we've talked enough about last week. Let's go ahead and talk to Kyle Reese from Redbird Daily as part of our Miners Report.
Oh, what a pull. In the air, left field, and Pujols has given St. Louis the lead. A dramatic, towering three-run home run. Stunned in disbelief here in Houston.
And we're joined again by Mr. Kyle Reese from the Redbird Daily, our minor league guru. And Kyle, I know that tomorrow, as we're recording this Friday night, Saturday morning, you'll have your weekly prospect awards out, looking back at the week that was in the minor leagues. Give us a little hint. Tell us what's going on that way.
Well, you know, the big name right now in the system is Junior Fernandez. Junior Fernandez on Wednesday night pitched the best game of his minor league career so far, which is encouraging, because he has not pitched particularly well in his two prior starts at Palm Beach. He took a perfect game into the seventh inning. He went 6 1/3, perfecto, let up a single, and then proceeded to finish out 8 innings of 1 hit, 1 walk, 6K baseball. The game score was 90, and that is the best performance in the minor league system, the Cardinals minor league system, so far this year. It will be the standard that all other pitching performances in the system are set upon. It was truly impressive. I listened to the game. It seemed like there was a lot of defense behind him that was really impressive, including Randy Arozarena, who's playing in center field, while Max Sierra is on the DL for Palm Beach, and Darren Seferina, who's a really speedy second baseman prospect who also has kind of a flash ability as a defensive second baseman. So he is the name. He placed, I think, 16th or 17th on Baseball America's prospect hot sheet for the week. And there's definitely a write-up in tomorrow's awards, weekly awards, on Junior Fernandez. And then as a hitter goes, The big hitter of the week, and there, it was actually a pretty strong offensive week in the Cardinals system. But the hitter of the week is Jose Adolis Garcia, or just Adolis Garcia. He had three home runs for Springfield. Two of the home runs were monster shots. I watched one of them rope around the pole over the weekend, last weekend, and it was a complete monster shot. The ball jumps off of his bat. I was not necessarily a believer when they signed him. I thought it would be a really solid depth piece in the organization, maybe somebody who, you know, over parts of a couple seasons would be able to contribute to the major league level without, you know, without beating the world. But he's really impressed me. He has serious bat speed. He's quick, and he has a really strong arm in the outfield. So I would say that the two names that have stuck out this last week are Adolis Garcia and Junior Fernandez. And it's been a really impressive week down in the system on an individual level more so than on a team level.
I was about to ask, while we've got you, what are the teams looking like? I know that, you know, the first couple of days of the minor league system, they were winning pretty regularly. Are they still doing fairly well, or is it kind of a mixed bag?
It's been interesting. So that first 2 days, they started off 7-0. They had a plus 28 run differential, and things are still okay. They only have one team that's sub 500. It's Peoria. Peoria's 6-7. But where it gets a little dicey is the only team that had a plus run differential of the four minor league teams that are playing currently were the Palm Beach Cardinals, and they had a plus 11. Now, it gets a little dicey because Peoria is a negative 2 on the run differential. Springfield, I think, is a negative 4 on the run differential. And then Memphis is a negative 21 on the run differential entering Friday night play. Now, especially with Peoria and Memphis, those two run differentials are weighted heavily by some lopsided losses these last couple nights. I think Memphis lost by 14 the other night, and Peoria lost by 11 the other night. So, you know, to take the run differential for what it is, lopsided wins and lopsided losses can really affect that number. But yeah, the only team with a losing record is Peoria. They're 6-7. Memphis is 7-7. Springfield's 8-5, and the Palm Beach Cardinals, who seem to be the standard bearer in the minor league system for the team, they're 9-6. And I think, if I remember correctly, Memphis is tied for first. Springfield is alone in first. And Palm Beach is tied for first as well. And Peoria is, like, tied for fifth. So, anyways, as I ramble on with records and run differential, they're in kind of an unusual situation. It seems like they're producing. It's just there hasn't been, like, steady. The offense hasn't been steady. Pitching hasn't been steady. It's kind of been a mixed bag so far in the minor league system for the Cardinals.
Well, why should the minors be any different than what we're seeing on the major league level, I guess, except the fact that they're winning a little bit more often. Anything else, I mean, anybody else that really stands out without spoiling the whole list for tomorrow? You know, anything else that has stood out, even maybe in a negative way? Is there anybody that's struggling this so far this year that wasn't expected to?
You know, it's kind of interesting. Memphis, it seems like all the guys you want to do well in Memphis are doing well enough. Paul DeJong is playing well. Carson Kelly's doing exactly what you would think he's doing. He's hitting just a shade under 280. He has a 370 on base percentage. He's not striking out. He has three home runs, which makes him halfway to his 2016 total of home runs. There's a lot of guys who are doing exactly what you would think in Memphis or what you would hope for them to do, but it seems like aside from Carson Kelly, everyone is striking out a lot. Luke Vogt, who was our player of the week in Memphis last week, he's striking out a lot, but he's productive. Patrick Wisdom striking out a lot. Harrison Bader's striking out a lot, but he's also walking a lot. I think his average hovered around 230 entering Friday, but his OBP was 352. That goes with the offensive consistencies. It was hard, and this should encourage a lot of people, but it was hard picking a double-A player of the week. I chose Adolis Garcia because I like power and because I've been really impressed with him. But, you know, Oscar Mercado's made a lot of noise converting to center field. His approach is completely different to what I've seen. And it was almost a coin flip in between if the double A hitter of the week was going to be Oscar Mercado or Jose Adolis Garcia, and I chose Garcia, but I could not be any more impressed with what I've seen out of Oscar Mercado. He also looks like a legitimate center fielder, and like a really impressive center fielder. It kind of reminds me, and he doesn't have the upside of Mookie Betts, but it kind of reminds me of when Mookie Betts transitioned from second to center before Mookie moved to right. He looked natural out there. It just looks natural. So there's a certain amount of athleticism that Oscar Mercado has as a 22-year-old that, you know, maybe it isn't time to you know, pull the curtain over quite yet.
Okay, so I'm going to try this professional segue here, and I don't know that I'm going to pull it off. But speaking of Garcia, I found it interesting this week that the write-ups on a certain person tended to mention that Garcia was very good friends with Luis Robert, who, of course, was drafted, was granted his free agency this week, and making you extremely, extremely happy. Is that a, before you go into your gushing over our possibilities here? Is that a possible? Not only did Garcia obviously have his talents and can and provide, but is there maybe the Cardinals' way of laying some groundwork there?
I would almost I don't think there's any way that it wasn't. They were definitely interested in Garcia. He is, you know, he is a legitimate prospect. But I think the Cardinals did everything from, you know, the ancillary view. They did everything that they possibly could to lay foundation to court Luis Robert when the opportunity arose, and that's where we're at right now. There are a lot of little connections with Robert and the Cardinals that that I find interesting. And you know, a while back, I was fortunate enough to do a Q&A, be a part of a Q&A with John Mozeliak, and he was really candid about the team's interest in Robert. And he was also, in that interview, he talked a lot about their efforts in Cuba in particular and Latin America. And I definitely think that Garcia was part of laying the foundation for Robert. But I also think that this is part of their larger plan, too, to be aggressive with Robert.
So let's talk a little bit about him. Obviously, again, free agent. He can't sign until May 20th, which means everybody's going to do the full court press on him for this whole month. Cardinals continue to be in that, you know, rumored list, along with the White Sox, the A's, the Padres, the Reds. It feels like, and I know you've talked about it before, about why the big teams aren't involved, but it feels like the Cardinals have the financial muscle to beat anybody if they want to, doesn't it?
Yeah, without a doubt. Without a doubt. It's interesting. You know, they definitely have the finance to do it. But when you're talking about teams like San Diego being involved in Cincinnati, you know, they don't really have a lot of money invested in their major league club. So it would also make sense that they would be able to, you know, go all in on a prospect like Robert if that's what their scouts and their owner were, you know, were to decide on. The White Sox are an interesting team to me. You know, just like with the Padres and the Reds, they have ties with signing Cuban players. You know, much has been made about Jose Abreu and what he had to go through to be, you know, to get his release to be able to be a free agent. And, you know, to smuggle himself out of Cuba, pretty much. But all these teams have connections. They all have capital. And there really isn't a team that couldn't afford Robert without like, hamstringing themselves. So the Cardinals have the capital, but I don't think that capital, I guess the best way of putting the capital that they have, the money that they can spend, it isn't going to help them as compared to the other teams, and it isn't going to hurt them compared to the other teams.
You know, that, you know, I've kind of read about the Reds not wanting to get into a bidding war over him, so they sound like they kind of are filtering out. But like you said, it feels like the White Sox are probably the biggest threat, if you will, to the Cardinals signing him. I saw something today that indicated the actual contract might between $27 and $29 million. Is that about what you were expecting? I mean, that's the contract. Obviously, the Cardinals would then have to pay the same amount to Major League Baseball in penalties. But does that feel about right?
Yeah, I completely agree. The one recording that we did that got destroyed to time and space when I first joined you guys, I mentioned that I thought Robert would go for just a kick underneath what Yoan Moncada went for when he signed with the Red Sox, and he signed a $31.5 million signing bonus. And, you know, like I've mentioned, Robert is not he's not the prospect that Moncada is. Moncada has a, I mean, Moncada could be a gold glover. He could be a silver slugger. He could be a batting average leader. Like, Moncada is, he's a beast. And, he plays a premium position, which changes it a little bit. But I bring all that up because I definitely think it's going to take $30 million, a $30 million signing bonus to sign Robert. And I don't think it'll be any less than that. So, we get in the habit of saying like 6 years, $30 million. Well, that's, that would be his minor contention here. So it gets a little dicey when you're trying to explain it. I definitely think you're looking at $30 million. And like you mentioned, because they're already over their international signing cap, that's an extra $30 million that goes to Major League Baseball. So you're looking probably at least $60 million to sign Luis Robert, that's quite a bit of money, but, there isn't a team in this bidding war that doesn't have $60 million that they can't throw around.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they get more than that from baseball's slice of internet and all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, that money is there. Whether they want to spend it or not is a different story.
Yeah, great point.
Any last comments about Mr. Robert before we wrap it for a week?
Yeah, the thing I'll say is, there was one thing that I want people to like really focus on. Now, when we get these prospects, when these kids, when the limelight finally gets shined on them, a lot of people get really excited about their talent. It's hard not to. It's a new shiny toy. It's hard not to get fired up when you see a kid that's toolsy. I saw going around an AL scout said that he's the best player on the planet. Please take that for the parable that it is. Don't try not to take that seriously. He is not the best player on the planet. He is certainly one of the best amateurs available on the open market. If he were to be in the draft this year, he would, he'd be a top five pick easy. I'd bet he'd go 1, 2, or 3. But again, try to remember that these are kids. There's still a lot at stake. There isn't as much known about him, and people get excited. So he's going to be good. There's no doubt about that. I have no doubt about that, and I think he's going to have a long professional career. But try not to get caught up in the sensationalizing of the kid's talents.
So you're saying that he's not Mike Trout right now?
Yeah, no, he might not be as good as Barry Bonds was in Barry Bonds' time. I don't want to break, a tough thing for people to accept, but yeah, believe it or not, he's not as good as Mike Trout or Mookie Betts right now.
Man, this is completely completely different. All right, Kyle, appreciate it, and look forward to talking to you again next week.
All right, Daniel,
thanks for joining us, getting a chance to catch us up a little bit on the minor leagues there. Obviously, again, Alan and I aren't minor league experts. That's why we rope in Kyle. But it was good, I think, to see MLB go ahead and let Luis Robert be a free agent and get that. That got a lot of people excited, I think, this week about the possibility of the Cardinals really going out and getting what could be one of the top talents out there.
Yeah, I agree. And this almost feels like a must sign for the Cardinals, considering the circumstances. So I hope it's a player that works out. And everybody seems to be pretty confident about that. And Twitter exploded with the news that he was going to be free to sign. So let's see how this plays out in a month. I'm really curious. It's I think they're going to be right in the middle of it. I could see them overpaying to get him involved, knowing that they're going to be out the loss of draft picks. I read a deal today that said that if he was in this year's draft, he would be a top 3 to 5 player. Mm-hmm. So that says a lot. And to be able to get on the open market, and I even read a deal to where they expect him to sign maybe $10 to $15 million less than Moncada. So I think that's one of those that you have to go over and you have to go after him aggressively.
Yeah, and Kyle was saying he thought it'd be a $30 million deal, which it very well may be. I think there's a lot of a lot of variables there. It's going to be a bidding war, and the Cardinals have to be one that they have to be aggressive in that, because there are so many I mean, it is that perfect storm of not having a draft this year, basically. Rules changing for going forward. And a need. I mean, you know, the Cardinals are going to need, they need a star player. And hopefully Robert can be that. They have to at least take the gamble that he can be. And so, again, it may be $60 million total because you may have to pay half of that to MLB for the penalties. But, you know, that's worth it. I feel like when you look at all the revenues that's coming in, you should be able to do that. And, again, I think I said in one of my posts this year, if you start talking about, you know, Delvin Perez at shortstop and you have Luis Robert in the outfield, then if you go out and make that big splash and get a Manny Machado, you put those three guys in the lineup here in about, you know, 3-4 years from now, maybe 2020. You know, that's a heck of a, you know, heck of a lineup, a little bit of a punch, and you still got some young talented pitchers that are coming up and guys that are under contract. You know, you really could put something together and you're going to need to, because the Cubs are not going away anytime soon. So, it would be very, very helpful if Mo just went out and did that.
Yeah, I agree. And that even leads more into the fact that this is, as Cardinal fans, we're spoiled. And, you know, when we see poor play, we get disappointed, but this could be the closest to a rebuild that we'll ever see. You know, maybe just be in the hunt for a wild card, don't make any big splashes with those things on the horizon. So that, with him being declared, you know, a international free agent to sign, that seems like there's a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel. I don't want to use that term considering that they were one game out of a playoff spot last year, but you know where I'm going with that. It seems like things could improve rather quickly if they were able to land something like this.
Yeah. I guess the good thing about, like you said, I was starting to think that it would be just the Cardinals' luck to have a terrible year the year they lose draft picks, but this would be for next year's draft, so I guess it wouldn't be that big a deal. So that's fine if they do have a bad year, but we'll see. All right. Well, let's quickly then go into our last segment, Swinging Away.
Tying run at second base. In the air to right center. This game is tied. Going to third is Pujols, and it's 9-9. They just won't go away.
Alan and I were talking before the show, and in the last couple of weeks, we've run this thing out quite a bit. And I'm not saying that this week's isn't going to be long. As well, but as much as we appreciate all the Twitter questions, and we really do, I mean, there's lots of good stuff that we get from them, I don't think we're going to spend the time to do every single one this time around, just because hopefully that'll keep us, it seems like we wind up taking an hour on this part by itself, and so we're going to try to answer a lot of these. If we don't get to yours, I apologize, we'll, you know, it will hit us up on Twitter, we'll answer it there. But let's talk a little bit about this. We got some here from Hustling Yachty and Matt. A couple of these put together, and I think a lot of this is going to, I'll have to look at some of these other questions, but I'm pretty sure there's some numbers in the same vein. Talk about Johnny Peralta, and again, we know Johnny Peralta went on the DL this week with a respiratory infection. I love the fact that both said they gave him medicine and it made it worse, and I thought, man, it's one. That's either A, an indictment of the medical staff, that or B, pretty fancy footwork there by Mo to get Peralta off the roster. But, and again, Peralta has struggled. And maybe some of it is issues. I mean, if there is a physical issue here, and again, Major League Baseball has to approve people being put on the disabled list, so they can't just say, oh, he's sick. But, so maybe he comes back. Maybe he has some value option here. But Matt is saying, Hustling Yachty is asking, he says, a lot of people are talking about designating Peralta for assignment. Is it a realistic option? Does he have any value on the trade market? And if it is, if he does get gone, are we looking at a platoon of Garcia, Jerko, and Carp? Is Adams' fate with the Cards linked to Peralta? That's a lot to deal with. let's just take the, take it in order. Do you think they could actually just waive Peralta?
I don't know. It's such a tough question because I think they really do want to see what he has left, and I think this upper respiratory infection basically means extended spring training. Mm-hmm. See if he can't find that bat and bring some kind of value, and see how serviceable he can be, or if it's been injury, or if the last 2 years are pretty legit and he's just falling off as a player. I don't know. I'm torn on it because they don't like to embarrass their stars, and he's no longer a star, but he's been great to the organization. He was a great sign, and he was well worth the money the first 2 or 3 seasons. I just don't see a DFA on it. I think that they're going to look around and try to find some sort of American League organization that will take him for peanuts, whatever they're going to get back, where he can DH and have a chance to play every day. I just don't see – it's not like a Wigginton-type situation where the writing was on the wall on that deal. I think that they're going to try to make it better for organization and player, and may even weigh player on how they're going to look at making the transition. I still don't think we've seen the last of him in a Cardinals uniform either.
No, I expect not. And I think that he's going to have to hit somewhere to have any kind of value. An American League team might take a gamble on him, hoping that he'll, bounce back and they can put him at DH and things like that. But, the Cardinals are still going to have to eat 80-90% of the salary.
Probably. Sure. And I like I said, I don't want to spend anybody else's money. I always hate saying that, but I think they'd be willing to do that.
Very possible. It just depends. But, yeah, I think you're right. I think we're going to see him again. He had a tolerable spring. He didn't hit all home runs. We did have some extra base hits. The defense is not going to be there, obviously. But, there's not a whole lot of stellar defense over there at third base anyway, unless maybe Greg Garcia is playing it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't see he's designated for assignment. Obviously, he would pass through waivers if that's the case because nobody's going to take that contract on. Is Adams' fate tied to Peralta? That's a possibility, though. It feels like, especially now that the Adams experiment in outfield is over, unless Matt Carpenter's going to play a lot of third, which we haven't seen yet, and I don't know that we will see a lot of third. It becomes very, very difficult to see how Adams gets in this lineup very much.
To me, Adams is the misfit to it more so than Peralta. If he hit his way onto the team, he should be hitting his way off the team because he's not doing the one thing that you brought him on board to do. Like I said, you anybody that's listened to this before, you and I we were in Adams' corner the whole time. He would be a pretty decent first baseman. The line's been drawn that Carpenter's not going to move much. That's why I was a little surprised to see him doing the work at third. I'm like, okay, what is the end game on this? Are they going to move Carp now to get Adams' bat in play? It didn't make any sense because at that point, now Garcia and Jerko had outplayed Adams. There was no reason for him to be in the lineup, and then he was getting the work over there. I understand it's a long season. There's going to be some there's going to be some times he's going to move over there. I know that this was talked about between you and I earlier this week of the idea of Carp being the Zobrist-type player, which I was hoping would happen 2 years ago when the Cards didn't get Zobrist, that they could have – he could be an everyday player at a different position every day just to make sure his bat was in the lineup. I would have been fine with that, and I don't think he would have been overexposed at any one position. I think the line's been drawn in the sand now. I think that he's a first baseman. I think that's what he has to do. I think that he's not going to make waves and say, I never said that, one of those deals, the organization's not going to say, well, he did say that. That's never going to happen. But there's obviously that's where they want him to play. So I don't know. I just don't know where Adams fits in the whole scheme of things on that.
Well, and Cassie says here, it's one of hers, and it's Pink Daisy 08 on Twitter. Apparently, Carp did actually express a semi-desire to be that Zobrist type of guy that's there now. I wonder about this, because this kind of goes along with what we were talking about with Mosaloc earlier. Because, yeah, it's this adamant, he's not moving off first, And then they have this conversation, and then the next day, Carpenter's taking ground balls at third base. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't know. I've always thought it was weird that Mozeliak was so adamant about Carpenter playing first so early in the spring. So I don't know where that came from. I don't know if it was Carp saying that, and then he decided he wanted to do something else. And heck, folks, it's not like Carpenter's any better at first base fielding than he is at third base, if there's any indication of, you know, two missed pickoffs this week and some other misplays.
He was playing first last year, and I honestly wondered, and it was in Milwaukee as well, I wondered if he had vision problems. Because he misplayed two balls last year, and it was the same pickoff move. And he just whiffed on them. And he did the same thing yesterday. And I just wonder if there's not some vision issues, because he immediately went to his eyes. And if you remember that clear pick the other night, or that play that almost cost Segrist the inning, he just dropped it.
Yeah.
And I, you know, just kind of makes me wonder.
I don't know. There have been some plays like that. Of course, then Carpenter's been picked off base twice this week, but that has nothing to do with his defense.
We're veering off the question, but I can get on the soapbox real quick.
You know, if Carpenter's accurate, if he actually does want to be that kind of guy, then I think that's great. I think that's better for the team, for him to be a little bit more flexible about where he plays because of that. Now, again, you do have to worry about Mike Matheny, and you wonder how he's going to use flexibility and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, and how is he going to use this? Now, I know a lot of people automatically panic and say, oh, he's, you know, this is Mike Matheny trying to get Matt Adams in the lineup because Matt Adams can't play outfield anymore, because if he plays outfield, Mike Matheny gets fired after what Tom Mozeliak said. And to be fair, if Matt Adams plays much more out of the outfield, it's almost insubordination on Matheny's part. I think he's smarter than them. And so, again, I don't have a problem getting Matt Adams in at first base. I think that, you know, I don't want him playing there all the time, but if you're going to play him, you want him playing at first base because he can play first base. But also, so far, that's not been the case either. I mean, we've seen a lot of Jose Martinez this week, whether it's been at first or in the outfield. I'm not sure that there's an automatic situation there. So I'm all for Carp moving around the infield and heck, moving into the outfield. He's played some outfield too. He's played more than Matt Adams had. So I think if that's the case, if he actually wants to do that, then more power to him.
Yeah, that's I wish they'd be a little more transparent on how they wanted to do it. I hope that this doesn't take whatever they're doing. I hope doesn't take at bats away from Martinez right now. He's their best hitter. You know what I mean? At this point, and he's the superior player to Adams because he can play multiple positions and he can run. And I just hope I don't want him to lose playing time to keep Adams fresh, as Matheny likes to say. And I can't imagine a situation where your infield would be better if with Adams at first and Carpenter at third, as opposed to Jerko Garcia and Carpenter at first now. So, you know, I don't know. It's it just seems like there's so much stuff that's in disarray and it's just dysfunction that they're just primed to make a move at some point. I don't know. It just felt like that from day one, that this is all building for something.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I always think that, but then Mozeliak has a way of not making those moves. So.
Yeah.
Cassie's other question was, do you think Pham would get any playing time if he was called up? Someone him here, due to his success in Memphis, I think he'd be benched again. He's not going to play as much as he does in Memphis. I didn't think he was going to play that much in Memphis, and he's done a very good job down there. You know, for the most part, it's good. And now, obviously, this factor does not factor into Dexter Fowler getting hurt, and if Dexter Fowler's out for any period of time, then that's a possibility. I mean, Pham could come up and play center field. But assuming everybody's healthy, it's Grichuk, Piscotty, and Fowler for, you know, 85% of your games, maybe 90% of your games. So, yeah, Pham's not going to play as much when he gets up here, especially with Jose Martinez. I mean, he's going to pinch hit and be a defensive replacement and things like that. So, you know, unless Fowler is hurt, it probably is best for him to be in Memphis right now and, you know, maybe build up some trade value, because I just don't see that he's going to find the regular time here in St. Louis.
No, I would like for him to stay in Memphis and just knock the cover off the ball to make a decision be made. And if that is at the expense of a Adams move or a Peralta move, then I would respect that a little bit more. But, yeah, I just don't – I think that would be a bigger logjam for him to come up now, barring any injury. And, you know, I feel bad for Pham, but he also can't stay on the field. So,
yeah.
You know, I don't even know if that's the right answer to the question, but
I don't know. We will find out, I guess. But and so far he stayed healthy. But you're right. And once he gets to St. Louis, there's no guarantees. So, let's see. We have Ben Adams at the P Vine is his one. Did anyone see Leak being the ace of the staff at this point in the season? I tell you what, it's not only is Mike Leake the ace of the staff right now, which is extremely surprising, he's doing it when the Cardinals' defense is even worse than it was last year, if you go by some of the metrics and the advanced stats. You know, that was the whole idea, that Mike Leake's going to be better because the defense is behind him, he's going to be better. So far, it hasn't mattered. He's just been that good.
Yeah, striking out a lot of guys. I mean, mm-hmm. He's looked really good. He's always been a competitor. I felt like he was going to have a better year, and what Lance Lynn said about him made me think he was going to have a better year whenever, you know, a couple, you know, I think they were still in camp when we had this conversation of Lynn came out and said, hey, keep an eye on Leak. He said he is, last year he wasn't comfortable. He was getting to know the new guys, all that stuff. He said, expect him to have a big year, and he's been right on the button. You know, he's pitched really well, and when he gets the ball, he's a competitor and he's a defender. And you know, I'm liking what we're seeing.
We had a question here from Simical Mutual, which I know that's not quite right, but you know.
Yeah, I'm not sure how to say it.
Anyway, I think Jim Sherritt here has a similar question, so tie them both together. You know, Johnny hitting the DL for allergies or whatever bought Mo time, but in a handful of days he's going to have to cut and demote someone. How does this shake out? Again, we'll see, I guess. I mean, in theory, Peralta could stay on the 10-day DL for quite some time and then go down and have a 20-day rehab assignment, and you got about a month to, you know, to deal with stuff and let things shake out. But, you know, right now the Cardinals have a, you know, 8-man bullpen, a 13-man pitching staff, which keeps them short on the hitting side. It feels like when Peralta comes back, if he did come back quickly, you know, pitcher's got to go. But, you know, like I said, Broxton's doing better. Sokolovich is still pitching pretty well. You know, my gut feeling, and I've said it, we said it on the show, I think, last week or the week before, where it was when Tyler Lyons comes back, Jonathan Broxton's going to be cut. And, you know, not only did they not have to do that because they brought Lyons back when Peralta went on the DL, right now Broxton's pitching well enough that it makes it difficult, I think, to make that decision. I don't know if who the obvious move is.
No, and that's it used to be we just kind of naturally thought that maybe his time was up. And even a week ago, I kind of thought that Broxton just didn't fit, and we're going to kind of start seeing some of the veterans I thought would be given some walking papers and seeing what was out there for him. But, you know, you could tell that there's still a lot of confidence in him in not only Matheny, but the front office a little bit. But that does – it leads to that question. Who does go? And at this point, I still think the Segrist will hit the Phantom DL, if not the real DL, first.
Yeah.
And I think that will be the situation. But I think the bullpen's coming around. I think Broxton's a weak link. We haven't seen Lyons yet, but I think that Broxton's going to be the weak link in that, because I have a lot of confidence in Bowman, and I think the big league club does too. And Sokolovich has no options and has done nothing but pitch well. So you would think that would be the name that would be the low-hanging fruit to cut, but I still think it'll be Segrist to kind of figure out what's wrong with him.
Yeah, I think that's safe to say. It really does feel like there's some sort of physical issue there. And it may be that the Cardinals don't wait around on Peralta to do that. They may put him on the DL and bring up one of these arms from Memphis. And that way they can, you know, option him back down if they need to and bring Peralta back. I don't know. I mean, it's we gotta see, but yeah. That just doesn't feel like Seacrest is going to be active the whole season.
No, and not only just performance, he just doesn't really fit a role right now.
Yeah,
you know that's like Cecil looks really good tonight, and I think that he's going to start taking that seventh inning, if not the eighth inning, uh-huh. depending on matchups, and Seacrest is going to kind of be in that bullpen type purgatory of, you know, mop up work, or, you know, we can't trust you in a big game. So, and that's one of those that'll get you on the DL or get you, you know, in Memphis real fast.
Yeah. All right. Mike Wilson, Mr. MG Wilson on Twitter. When, if ever, this season will Wainwright be relegated to the bullpen? Now, obviously, this question was asked before tonight's ballgame.
Yeah.
You know, it's not going to happen this year.
No, I don't think so either.
I don't. I mean, the bullpen one is very strong, and you know, if the rotation does what it's been doing, you deal with those shaky fifth day outings from Wainwright. But I just don't. I don't see that he's that much more effective at the bullpen. It's not like Wainwright is going out there and pitching like two great innings and then falling apart in the third. You know, he's pretty much, you know, getting hit hard from the get-go if he gets hit hard. And so it's difficult, I think, for me to think that he's going to be more effective out of the bullpen.
Oh, I agree with that. If it stayed status quo right now, and he looked good one out of every four starts, and Walker was doing what he was doing right now, I still, without a doubt, say in a four-man rotation, Wainwright would be in it, and Walker would not. And I just don't think they'll ever do that to him. And I agree. It's not 06. That curveball is not the same. He's not going to be any lockdown guy like he used to be. I don't think we'll ever see a bullpen issue out of him. I think it would be if he didn't start, there would be an issue to where they trade him somewhere comfortable, or he rides off into the sunset. Yeah, that's just kind of how I feel. I think he's going to start as long as he can throw a ball.
Yeah, I think that's probably safe, unless he has some sort of injury or whatever. But for the most part, yeah, I think once he figures out he's not starting, then he's probably going to start looking at that retirement. Texas Cards fan one, Scott, sent us a few questions, as he always does. And then
always good.
Yeah, we'll go with this one, though. Just, it says, Cards are last in defensive rankings already, and the team isn't hitting. Isn't there too much to fix? Relief pitching, defense, and offense. I will say that if you expect John Mozeliak to make a trade that fixes this team, it's not going to happen, because there is a lot of different options. But that being said, the bullpen is stabilizing. I feel like we've talked about a number of times tonight. We feel pretty confident that bullpen is getting better and it's going to continue to get better. So it really boils down to the defense and offense. The defense you can't do anything about, I don't think. I think that, you know, you're kind of stuck with what you get and hope that they can catch the ball a little bit more often than they are. And offensively, you know, that one may be a place. I mean, that's the only thing you could see is, you know, a deadline trade for somebody to play third base. You know, whether they went, you know, to Josh Donaldson if the Blue Jays put him available or something like that. They could do that. They're not going to do that till July, though. I mean, so they're going to have to get by until then. You know, I think that's the best chance you have to fixing the offense, which I think is probably the scariest thing right now. It's just trying to get enough offense generated. Because the defense, I just don't know what else you can do with it.
No, I agree. I think that I would be comfortable with a defense of Jericho Garcia, Diaz, Wong, and Carp. I would be pretty comfortable with that on the infield because I don't think they could get any worse. I think that you're going to – I think we've all realized at this point that Diaz is going to be a bat-first shortstop. Mm-hmm. I think you can live with that. I know some of the errors they're massive right now because they're not playing well anywhere else. I agree with you on this, that there's not going to be a move that he makes to improve everything, but I will tell you he's very good about making small moves that make you incrementally better in other areas to overcome the deficiencies in others. And that wouldn't surprise me. I keep thinking I just feel like if they're close, there's going to be some move made this year to make them good. And I don't know what that is. Third base is the easy place to pick, but you never know if Wong has that, if he's playing well right now. You don't know if that's the time they're going to trade him whenever he's playing well. I start to wonder about Grichuk a little bit. If he doesn't catch a little bit of fire, if he's not one of the names that we see maybe shipped somewhere. So, no, I don't think all those things can be improved right away. And I know it seems like a massive, like it's going to be, it doesn't seem like that's going to keep them, it doesn't seem like it's going to sink the ship. I do think everything is going to stabilize before long and they're going to be good. And I think Mozeliak's going to have a hand to do it with that.
Seems like it. Like I said, I think that it's going to, like you said, it's not necessarily one thing. It just kind of, maybe small things here and there that'll work out.
You know what? I know we want to cut this short, but I had on some of the Redbird Daily direct messages, I said something too along the lines of, you know, Donaldson's a pretty big fish, but what would a deal look like for if the Blue Jays are just, if they stay pat now and they're just not very good and they just showed where they're just you know, a clogging home run hitting team and they just don't improve in that division and they decide to sell. Is there a situation to where the Cards finally get Tulowitzki and shift Diaz to third and ride that out until Perez is done? He's only signed through 2020, you know, and there's a lot of talk that ultimately Tulowitzki's going to have to move. Is that one of those incremental moves that they go get to where you're thinking, man, what are they doing bringing this aged, you know, shortstop who's injury prone in? But that's one of those deals to improve you in 3 and 4 years?
Maybe. It'll be, I mean, you know, that's interesting, the thought, because there has been, of course, the talk about Tulowitzki for a long, long time. He has not hit very well in Toronto. I mean, he hit 24 home runs last year, which is good, obviously. But, you know, 79 RBI, 254 average. His OPS was a plus, was just 101. So he was, you know, right around league average there. So that's, I mean, it's interesting to think about. I mean,
my second thought behind that process too of the I always look at former trade partners, and Mozeliak has dealt with the Indians a bunch.
Oh yeah.
And with the Indians now, the old Indian regime run in Toronto now, I'm wondering if that's not something that would work out. I don't know. I think there's a lot of signs that point to that, but it goes back to this situation too. Anybody, you and I have been Cards fans for a long time. Any of those guys that they've always had targeted, they've never brought any of them in.
No.
You know what I mean? None of those guys ever make it to St. Louis.
No, I mean, I guess, you know, they talked about Matt Holliday, but not for as long as some of these others. But you look at, you know, like a Mark Burley, not a guy that necessarily the Cardinals
targeted. Great example. Great example right there.
A guy that we always kind of thought, especially at the end of his career, would wind up in St. Louis and never did.
Stephen Drew. Yeah. Stephen Drew was another one. That was one that you're just like, okay, that's going to happen someday.
Last question is from Uncle Frank, F.R. Robinson, 1957. Do you expect to see someone else closing games instead of O by the 1st of May? Now,
you know my opinion on that.
Yeah, I mean, the 1st of May is a week from Monday. The Cardinals, O could blow four saves between now and then. He's still going to be closing games at the beginning of May. That is a short sample size. Again, we kind of talked about this earlier, but it would not surprise me to see Trevor Rosenthal get a few more ninth innings, especially if they get on a winning streak and O's pitched some. But, you know, it's going to – we saw it last year. I mean, it's going to take a significant meltdown by O to not be the closer, I think. Matheny just doesn't make those changes quickly.
No, and it comes to the point where I just don't think they want to embarrass guys. And, you know, because we saw him hang on with Rosenthal way longer than he should have last year. And we've seen that with other guys. I mean, like Mujica, you know, that second year after he was lights out, he was terrible. and they never made that switch. You know, he was an automatic loss when he came in. You're just like, oh, here we go. So yeah, it would. I ultimately think it's going to be Rosenthal at some point this year, but no, by the 1st of May, I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, yeah, I don't think so either. All right, Cardinals, like I say, finish up with the Brewers, 2 games there, have the off day Monday, 3 games with the Blue Jays, and as you point out, the Blue Jays are struggling, but, you know, what bothers me is when a team is struggling so badly before the Cardinals get to them, because it seems like that's about the time that team turns it around. So we'll see. That's in Bush. Like you said, they lose the DH, so that should help. And then the Cardinals have a series with the Reds. We will record next week on Saturday instead of Friday, so we'll have that extra game to talk about. Alan, any closing thoughts before we wrap it for the night?
No. I always have closing thoughts or thoughts, period. But yeah, this a little more upbeat. It feels like they're really close. You know, next week I may be, you know, cussing into the speaker. You never know. But I still feel like they're really close, and I think that the offense is going to start clicking, and I think they're going to become what they wanted to become, and they're going to start getting on base and driving in some runs, and I think the pitching is going to hold, and I think they're getting ready to make a pretty serious move.
All right. Well, that's my hope. I hope that, you know, they can come in. They always do well against the Brewers. Hopefully that'll, you know, continue this weekend. They can beat up on the Jays and then, you know, maybe give the Reds back a little bit from what they had earlier. It's a little weird quirk of the schedule for the Cardinals to have the Reds in town twice in the first month before going to Cincinnati, but schedules are weird. All right. So I guess until next time, I'm Daniel and that's Alan. Good night.
Good night.
Sutter from the belt to the plate. A swing and a miss. And that's a winner. That's a winner. A World Series winner for the Cardinals.